So, guys, today we're going to talk about a company that just raised $7.85 million in equity funding in an area that's seen huge funding, like in the hundreds of millions in the last few years. Patrick, last week on this format we're doing, the Bricks and Bytes podcast, you said it was one of the most underserved areas of construction tech. So, guys, welcome to the Bricks and Bytes broadcast with Patrick Hellerman, which is a weekly digest of the hottest construction tech news. So, before we get started, Patrick, you love robotics. Why is that?
Morning, guys. I think robotics is a space that has some of the highest value of applied AI, because you can solve a very big bottleneck within the construction trade, which is not material, it's labor. Material has been for the longest time, but qualified labor is a big issue. And oftentimes we think it's a mature market problem, which it is, because we in many of the mature markets don't have enough qualified labor. But it's also an emerging market problem because they have enough labor which is not qualified enough. So the qualified labor pool is too low in the entire global world to fulfill construction projects. And that's where robotics and the application of AI onto robotics fit squarely in.
Are we not too early for like replacing humans or labor with robotics yet?
I don't know. I mean, when I look at some of the construction projects that don't get finished on time, that don't get started on time, delays, etc., especially in the long tail of construction projects where work is like the hardest to acquire, I think fixing the labor issue is right on time. And when you talk to contractors across the board, I always hear the same issue. I don't get enough workforce. I don't get enough qualified people. I don't get enough motivated people. When you talk to the workforce, bricklayers, for example, is a trade that I've spent a bit of time with. These people will actually say, "Hey, I'd love to stay in the job, but if I lay the bricks in the first like 1.5 meters in height, it goes onto my knees and back. And so I can't keep doing that height." And so it's actually fascinating for the bricklayer trade, for example. The veterans want to keep going, but they adopt robotics because they say it helps me with this lower 1.5 meters.
Nice. We would a very interesting topic that just come to mind would actually be to talk about the labor shortage, but maybe we can cover that in a future episode. Because I think there's lots of different ways aside from robotics that people are trying to tackle this. But as we mentioned, Okibo, so they just raised $7.85 million. This was taken from a piece they sent me, which was a little description. So the company's product is a drywall finishing and painting robot guided by AI and sensors. So this means without prior scans or ingestion of digital information, the Okibo robot is able to create a three-dimensional map of its surroundings, determine the finishing requirements, and keep track of its own process. What I noticed about this, and there's something that I've noted, Patrick, you mentioned before, is that they're not selling the robot, they're selling the service, i.e. the painting.
I mean, it's what we call VCs love jargon, right? So our jargon for this is we say outcome as a service, which is just a fancy way of describing how the construction industry has operated forever, which is, a contractor would buy a service to put a wall in place or put drywall in place or finish a drywall or put painting in place. And
You
so
can't
that's the
pass your
smartest
VC
way.
exam unless you know these terms, right?
Sure. Yeah, well, I mean, the highest quality grade of a VC is when you invent terms. So, that's when you get the gold medal. No, but kidding aside, and so that's, I think, what Okibo has figured out very well. We have realized that several years ago, and actually, I would say a pioneer in that space was a company that attacks a similar market in the US called Canvas, which is a pioneer in drywall finishing, Canvas Robotics. And so they first figured out that actually offering your robot as a subcontractor instead of leasing the robot or selling the robot was a good way to sell into the construction trade, which just makes sense the way the economy operates. And so Okibo is doing it the same way.
So they're becoming a contractors effectively. How scalable that is from a startup point of view? Because I guess then they will have to be then selling towards other contractors that who then can use the robots to provide the outcome, yeah?
So that's the thing, right? So there's no construction robotics company that I know of that really has reached the scale to put this thesis to test across, let's say, 2,000 projects a year, just to put a scale number out there. So to my knowledge, nobody has actually pulled up a subcontractor model in robotics at like that scale. In the early years, let's say 5, 6, 7 years, building a robotics company, you're not constrained by scale. You're not constrained by demand for two reasons. One, your robot typically needs to become really good at a vertical narrow task, and that requires time. And two, it's a track record problem. So in construction, once you have track record, the word of mouth, it perpetuates your business. And so you're actually not demand constrained as such. You're more constrained by how many projects you can really deliver at a high quality and not a poor quality. And so that means that in the first 5, 6, 7 years, nobody's putting this to test. So to test your question, Martin, we'll have to see another 2 to 3 years with the companies, the robotics companies that offer the software.
One thing I noticed was when I was reading about Okibo in particular, is that their kind of route to, is it, I don't know if it's, if you can classify as a go-to-market, but how they've sort of grown in the last few years or so is by doing partnerships. So I can't actually find the piece where I saw, but I think they teamed up with a large, as Caporal.
Oh, Caporal, the producer of painting, of paint.
Yeah, so they produce professional painting projects, which allowed Okibo to execute some large-scale pilot projects. So this seems quite significant for people doing this thing. They need to. Would you say that partnerships are like super important, or how other way? If Patrick, something you can comment on, like what are some other ways that these robotic companies can actually get their solution actually being used? Because I, for one, haven't seen a robotic on construction site I've been on in recent years. But I did see a video, and excuse the cliche, of spot the dog on a construction site. However, there was no one else on the construction site at the time.
So to answer your question, I think you have to ask yourself, what is the model with which I'm growing my robotics company? So to perhaps dumb it down into like a low number of possible models. So you can sell the robot. You can offer robot as a service / lease it. It's not exactly the same, but it's sort of the same. Or you could actually offer it as a subcontractor and continue scaling as a subcontractor. And in the subcontractor model, the long-term vision that some of these companies rightly pursue is to combine an in-house with a franchising type model. I'll explain what that means. So selling, I think, is clear. Robot as a service means, hey, I put the robot on site, but you operate it, I maintain it, right? Which comes with training. There's a bit of infrastructure, a bit of onboarding. So it's still tough for the contractor that perhaps doesn't believe the track record yet or wants to see more positive outcomes before. And then offering as a subcontractor is a very low friction way to do that. But to Martin's point, how do you scale that? Personally, I believe the most in the third kind of model for several reasons. It captures most of the value that is on the table. It's not a one-off sale. So you can keep offering projects after projects the same way a subcontractor would do. And you can combine it with what I call a franchise model. So in certain regions where you want to acquire new business, you don't need channel partners, for example, the Caporal example, to sell your robot or to help sell the leasing of the robot. Instead, you have local workforce that becomes your business partner as sort of franchisees, but they operate on your technology stack. They operate with your hardware. They operate with all of the processes that you put in place, but they acquire projects and oversee projects locally. Whereas in the big cities, you could still offer that as an in-house service. So you would have a mix of a subcontractor business between in-house forces and franchise forces. And that way you're building up your own sales channels, which is a model I really favor.
I have a weird question to ask. Do you know how it works with in automobile industry, the robots which paint the cars? Are this what type of model is it?
I can't say that I'm an expert on this. So let me not comment. Mm-hmm. My intuition is they would oftentimes be either sold or perhaps leased. Mm-hmm. But I'm not aware that this would be sort of a contracting or cloud manufacturing type.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So speaking about the models and then so selling, maintaining and or leasing, and then because it's still at the end of the day, it needs to be cost efficient for the contractor or for the client, right? So I guess none of the companies that produce the robots right now, manufacture the robots, are kind of profitable or see the path to profitability. How would you approach this?
So there might be one or two that have been in the market for quite long that are profitable. I'm not privy with their numbers, and if I am, I will not admit it. But there might be one or two. But I think you're right. The vast majority, especially of the earlier ones, first 5 years or so, you know, there's a lot of product development and again, track record building, which means that if you're not profitable, you will have to do a lot of product development, build the track record, and have someone finance the party for you. One. And two, you would have to have the conviction that at some point your business explodes and scales, which to your point, if I keep offering as a subcontractor and go project by project, I need to figure out what is the bottleneck that will not allow me to go from, let's say, to go from 1 to 10 projects instead of from 1 to 2 projects. In my experience and my intuition, that bottleneck will typically be track record. To give you an example, there's a robotics company in our portfolio that works with Bricklay. And so their robot on a hardware material cost basis is unbelievably cheap. Whereas many of the robots that I've looked at in other trades cost, I'm not kidding you, 10 to 15 times more on a bill of materials basis. That's a real bottleneck, because that means to even do more projects, you need to raise more capital. Whereas the company that can build a robot for a low 5-digit amount, they need to raise capital once, and they can already then serve, you know, 50, 100 projects with the capital that they have, because the robots are so cheap to build. So that should never be your bottleneck. Track record is what should be your bottleneck, and that compounds. The more track record you have, the more projects you're going to do.
Interesting. Low 5 digits to build a robot. Just thinking.
Like on the broader landscape of things. So since 2022, there's been around 17, let's say, publicly announced funding rounds of robotics in construction. These range from this the figures I found, 2.5 million. Upwards of 450 million in the case of Icon. So more recently we had a raise of this is in the, like, let's say the last four to five months, we had a Series A from Monumental, $25 million, PaintJet, $10 million, and Promise Robotics, $16 million. I don't want to use the word, but is there a little bit of hype around this at the moment?
I can't spot one. I do think it's much more on the map of generalist investors than it has been at any of the years prior. And a lot of the, I think, misconceptions or prejudices of robotics companies being very difficult to execute or very capital intensive and very diluted, I think they got swept away the last 2 to 3 years. But it hasn't quite flipped into hype, like hype is other stuff that I'm seeing, like energy companies right now are hyped, AI companies, you know, very hyped, of course. So I think the prejudices got swept away, but it's not entirely hype. I think there's actually a lot of substance. And the good investors, they are figuring out, I think, a specific thesis for robotics, which is not rooted in the hardware, but is actually rooted in the belief that for the next generation of robotics companies in blue collar, to which I count construction, will actually be product companies and software companies. And that's my firm belief. So I look for founders that come with a product mindset, that don't even come with an automation background. Let's say you work for ABB or Siemens or any other company in the automation space. I don't think that's actually necessarily the ideal background for such a founder. The ideal background is a software and product background, because it allows you to componentize a platform, and it allows you to have a mindset of automating just enough, but not everything.
Mm-hmm.
And when you looked at the construction robotics market 5 years ago, you would see a large share of founders that would actually have the Ferrari type mindset. Let's automate everything. Mm-hmm. Let's make everything completely perfect. And that's not necessarily the thing I love. So a product background type founder will not approach it that way. And we see more and more of those in the market. And that's what good investors catch up on.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that you've got a company in your portfolio that deals with Bricklay. Can you tell a little bit more about them?
Yeah, so that's Monumental, the company that Owen raised, which actually got funding of an additional 25 million Series A this year. So the company is founded by two founders that previously founded a software company, sold that to Palantir, then stayed on with Palantir for a little over 3 years, and then spent a year of a sabbatical researching what their next company would be. And they honed in on construction. And then within construction, after a few months, they realized that the robotics opportunity is really large, and they figured out what trades in the European and US markets would have the best characteristics to roboticize. And so a few of the characteristics that they looked for were controlled environments, highly repeatable motions, so that you would not have to automate a huge variety of different motions, but actually one reliable one, and a few other characteristics. And so that's how they landed on the bricklaying trade. And so since 2021, they built a robot which is highly functional. It already works on sites, is revenue generating. They're doing the first internationalization this year. I think they're executing really well, and it's a very exciting company.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned, so they are doing bricklaying. So Okibo does painting and drywalling. What other kind of vertical activities within construction you see are being covered by robots?
So you would probably find a robot right now for a lot of the trades in construction. So that's the short answer. The long answer is perhaps twisting your question, what am I looking for in terms of robots? And so I like trades that have not more than two axes of motion, ideally. And that because the less motion variation you have, the simpler and easier it will be to build a robot platform. So I find that very important. I also like roboticized tasks where safety is an issue, because that will, in the age of a shrinking workforce, actually lead to much faster adoption. And so that comes then again with the safety typically requires higher training from the workforce. So again, that's, giving you a task that is very tough to recruit for and much easier to build a robot for. And then in absence of safety, I'm looking for health issues. So like the 1.5, the lowest 1.5 meters of a wall creates a lot of, back and knee issues. And then the final piece is I try to avoid any geometries that are difficult to control, which, let me give you an example. Tiling robots is a very difficult business because you don't have a large enough uniform surface in relation to the corners that you have to bricklay, which requires a lot of variation of motion in order to get these surface area tiled. Whereas bricklaying is exactly the opposite. You have a very large surface area, two-dimensional, that you can bricklay without a short, without a large amount of edge cases or corner cases. So another trade that fits this is roofing in the US. So I love actually the roofing shingle market. Again, same characteristics, safety issues, health issues, large surface area, very few edge cases and corner cases.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the last one, Owen, from me. So software seems like is very widely used on pretty much every construction site to some degree, more and less. Robots, I have not seen any. Owen has not seen any. I'm sure you've seen some, at least in the demo sites. But what is your prediction? I know you don't make predictions, but what is your prediction on when we will see some robots on, let's say, 20% of construction sites of certain type? Like, are we talking 2 years, 5, 15 years?
So strangely, and perhaps contrarian, I actually think that you will see robots faster on mass residential, but long tail residential, single family homes, townhomes, and small multifamily homes before you see them at scale in any of the more complex high rise projects or mid rise projects. And I think for these, let's say, projects where you have 100 different 100 similar townhomes, I think you will see a large or a fair chunk of robots in the next 5 years.
Really?
Yeah. One question, one thing I noticed as well whilst reading about Okibo, And also, we were speaking about Monumental and the geography. So they're based in, so Monumental are based in the Netherlands. And just I'll add to the point on Okiba as well, their R&D department is in Israel, but operations are in Germany. So I'm interested how these robotics would scale to like a global stage. It sounds expensive. I could be completely wrong. Do you have any thoughts, Patrick?
So no first-hand experience super specific to the internationalization of a construction robot. I can deduce from the experience of other companies. I actually don't think the internationalization will be very expensive, because you would not ramp up in a new country before you have 1, 2, 3 projects acquired from afar. And so then you need to execute them with the robot system that you have in place. You need to build a little bit of a supply chain for a small number of projects in order to actually build track record. And once you have track record in place, you can then kind of feel out the right timing to ramp up in that specific market. So in my opinion, it's actually one of the more efficient internationalization motions compared to, for example, an enterprise software company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe there'll be some shipping concerns following the release of Practical Nerd's latest episode on logistics. Enjoyed the listen.
I appreciate it.
That was a very good episode, by the way.
Learned a few things about the Panama Canal.
And carried interest in the 15th century.
Yeah, that was interesting, yeah. That's where it still stemmed from. Okay, do we have any more on this, or should we wrap up for the week?
Patrick, anything else we should ask you about robotics? Or we haven't?
Have we talked enough about Okibo?
So on Okibo, so they right now have two types of robots or two types of services they cover. One is dry lining and another one is painting. So why did they do you know why did they choose those two? And I think they started from dry lining and then pivoted or expanded services into painting. Any thoughts on this?
Yeah, so I think the drywall case was one, again, that was pioneered in 2017-18 initially by the team over at Canvas Robotics. And I know for sure that their logic for picking drywall was saying, hey, it's one of the most labor-intensive tasks. One of the tasks to get a drywall finished at the highest quality level that you would need in order to then process the drywall. It takes a huge amount of manual labor. And it comes also with quite an unpleasant work environment because, you know, you're sending it down and then you have all the dust in the air, etc. So it came again from like a place of let's automate the most difficult thing, which was not necessarily what we believed in, but that was, you know, still, I think, a logic to follow. And I would imagine Okibo perhaps initially had a similar logic. And I think expanding into painting follows a different logic. I think it follows much closer the logic that I had mentioned. Which is, hey, let's get a large surface area, very few edge cases and very few corner cases, and let's try to just get like one motion very, very well on two axes. And if we can master that, we can actually create a very large amount of monetary value as a subcontractor. So I think the rationale for both trades is actually really different, and I'm glad they picked painting. Mm-hmm. I think it's a very good expansion of that robot.
My first thought when I looked at the videos on YouTube about drywalling is like, oh my God, how they're going to finish it off on the edges or like above or at the top? It's just impossible to do that. When I then saw the painting one, it's like, oh my, yeah. that's a brilliant use case.
So any founder that wants to build a robot for roofing, I'm here, and for paving. Paving is the exact same problem. So this is another one that I'm actively looking for. Great founder teams.
Oh, and shall we pivot?
Yes. Bricks and bytes, paving. Abs and bytes. Okay. One thing. This is a slight... I'm going to use your favorite word here, Patrick. Nuance of the VC and maybe founders world.
We get to know each other way too well.
Why would it come... Okay, so when I was researching for this episode, I noticed the terms that were... The language that was used to describe this raise. And all I could find was raises... Let's say Okibo raises 7.85 million in equity funding. Mm. There's not like a mention there of seed or Series A or anything like that. So not just in Okibo's case, but say in the general VC nuanced world, why would you maybe not label it as a seed or series A or B, whatever it is?
That's a result of how the entire venture funding world has become really murky the past 10, 12 years. So perhaps a quick history lesson. The reason why financing rounds in venture are actually labeled by letters, you know, you start with, originally you would start with a seed, which would be the original share sale after the founding of the company. And then you would go with the letter rounds, right? A, B, C, D, E. They were called that way because that was how you structured and numbered the financing rounds. So the first round after the seed, you could either call it one or A, and then B and C and D. So this is where it comes from. Very simple, but that's the origins. And so over the last decade or so, as more funding became available, the round structures got broken up. There were bridge rounds, intermediate rounds, extended rounds. And so every time something like that happens, a lawyer or a founder or an investor becomes really creative and calls it a pre-seed or a seed one or a B2, an extension, etc. And so that's oftentimes led to becoming, you know, very murky and not that clear anymore as it was originally intended, without actually any good business reason to do it other than, you know, making sense of an increasingly chaotic world. In the case when you don't announce it at all, it's probably because you have tacked on a number of financings and it would become like whatever, your A3 or your B2. And so instead of going with something super chaotic, you just say, hey, for now, let's leave the letters and the next round we'll give a letter.
Mm. I hope it will be long before we see A1, A2, A3.
Is that...
Oh, yeah, they happen.
Is that generally a red flag?
No. I mean, not for me anyway. It's every company has its unique trajectory and history. And I will say, actually... it's a bit of a sideways answer, but I think it answers your question, Martin. I'm actually fascinated with businesses in construction tech that have been around like for a decade, bootstrapped. And lately I'm spending a lot of time on looking for such companies who have built a massive amount of product, again, track record, business goodwill. They figured out channels, but they haven't scaled yet. But now if you give them money, you can actually capitalize on the product market fit together with the founders. And so these companies actually have no letter in the cap table because they never sold any shares, right? And the other way around, it can also be that a company raised a large amount of capital 5 years ago, since then has plateaued, and they look for investors to reset the cap table. Again, that's not a red flag. You have to look at the unique situation, and there can still be tremendous value for the shareholders of the company in doing so. So I think that's too simplistic to think of that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the first example sounds like CAD Engineering Solutions. And on that note, we should wrap up.
Based on Tom Owen.
Martin, what were you meditating on this week?
What I'm excited, are you asking? Or what I'm meditating on?
Whatever.
Yeah, so we meeting XYZ Reality next week in their office. So I'm quite excited about this. That's me.
Owen, what are you meditating on?
My one's a little bit more touchy-feely, for lack of a better term. But I'm glad my other business partner, James, is back from holiday. I think finding the right people to do business with is very important. And when you have good synergy and you work well together, it just it can pull you through sometimes. So that would be my thing. You, Patrick?
I mean, as you know, I'm still figuring out this meditation thing. I spent a ton of time this week relaunching my other format, AECVC. I converted it into a video format. So I guess I meditated on how to make that fly.
Coming soon to a blog near you. Okay. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.